Thank you, Valerie. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining our first quarter 2013 earnings conference call. Our earnings release presentation and supplemental disclosure are all available on our website under the Investor Relations tab. In addition, this quarter, we are webcasting the presentation so you can follow along with us. We encourage participants to log on into the webcast via our website. This evening, we'll hear from Jeff Schwartz, Deputy Chairman and Co-founder of GLP, who will provide an overview of GLP's first quarter results, then follow up with Ming Mei, our CEO and Co-founder, who will further discuss our business, and end with Heather Cia, our CFO, who will review our financial results. We will then close the call with a Q&A session where we invite both investors and analysts to ask questions. I will now hand the call over to Jeff.
First, I'd like to thank all of you for joining our call today. As you can see from our earnings announcement just released, GLP continues to make solid progress expanding our footprint profitably. I'd like to start by emphasizing a number of key themes. Then myself, Ming, and Heather will talk you through the results in more detail. We're delighted to report significant growth in both revenue and earnings. China and Japan remain very attractive markets with strong demand and limited supply. Our market-leading positions in both markets continues to drive our performance. Our financial position remains robust and provides a solid foundation as we continue to grow. While we're mindful of the global economic backdrop, we are confident in our future prospects. Now turning to our results for the first quarter, which you can see summarized on slides four and five of our presentation. Group revenue was up 32% year-on-year. China continues to be a key driver, with revenue growing more than 75% year-on-year as a result of the completion of development projects and our operational growth. Group PATMI rose just over 57% in the quarter, with PATMI in China up 419% and PATMI in Japan up 20%. Our business produces strong cash flows, with net cash flow from operations increasing 130% year-over-year to over $140 million. We have strong core portfolio with 446 properties, just over 10 million sq m of completed GFA. This is an increase of 46% year-on-year in gross floor area. Our lease ratios remain high, 91% in China and 99% in Japan. Our same-store net operating income growth was robust at 10.4% year-on-year. Our development pipeline remains strong and we believe sustainable to drive future growth in line with strong demand in both markets. We had almost 650,000 sq m in development starts in Q1, and we remain on track to meet our target of 2.4 million sq m of development starts in China and Japan in fiscal year 2013, up 44% from last year. In our best-in-class fund management platform, we continue to benefit from our strong relationships with major global institutions such as China Investment Corporation and Canadian Pension Plan, and enhance our network effect to better meet our customers' needs. We're focused on building out this platform further in a significant fashion. We have a strong capital base, providing both stability and the flexibility to pursue our growth plans. With total assets of $14 billion, up 13% on last year, our NAV has grown 18% year-on-year. We have significant liquidity with net cash of $1.5 billion and a low leverage ratio with net debt to assets of only 22%. Now I'd like to turn it over to my partner, Ming Mei, to further discuss our progress.
Thank you, Jeff. First on China, I'd like to give you some color on the market backdrop in China to explain why we remain excited about the opportunity for growth here. Despite recent coverage on the macroeconomic environment in China, we believe we're well-positioned. While GDP growth is slowing somewhat, it is still outgrowing the rest of the world. Our exposure is to the domestic consumption, and domestic consumption continue to drive our business. Retail sales is up 14.2% year-to-date. Our exposure to domestic consumption means that we are perfectly placed to benefit from this, as 80% of our business are driven by domestic consumption. We're encouraged by the measures that the Chinese government are taking to stimulate sustainable growth. In addition, the Chinese government continues to support the logistics sector as a main pillar to reduce distribution costs and expand domestic consumption. The e-commerce industry continues to offer opportunity for growth. Online retail sales have doubled every year since 2005. We are seeing e-commerce companies taking a more cautious approach to running the business with more focus on cost and profitability, which in the long run is very encouraging and healthy. The overall warehouse market remains very strong. Market occupancy is very high at over 9% in all our major markets. GLP's stabilized logistics portfolio is more than 91% occupied, and all the assets that dedicate to domestic consumption are 98% leased. Market supply continues to fall short of demand, with minimal new logistic land available in key hubs such as Shanghai. To give an example, Shanghai has a total current supply of approximately about 18 million square meters, which is less than a fifth the supply of Los Angeles, despite having a population 50% larger. And market rental market rent continues to grow in both major hubs and upcoming markets. CBRE research shows that asking rental in major markets has risen by 10% in the past 12 months. So given this, how are we doing in China? As you can see from slide 7 in our presentation, demand from our customers remain strong, with the lease ratio increasing 100 basis points from the previous quarter to 91%. As you might remember, we recently signed our largest lease ever by value at the Beijing Capital Airport, worth around $130 million for the first 10 years. New and expansion leases signed total around 280,000 square meters, up 30% from last quarter. New and expansion leases were well in excess about development completion in the quarter, highlight the strength of demand. And we're expecting completion to speed up over the next few quarters. We have acquired additional 1.2 million square meters of site area for future development to meet the demand of our customers. We have started 470,000 square meter development, and this is slightly less than 25% of total target, 2 million for the financial year. But this is a function of seasonality similar to last year. Therefore, we expect, as Jeff said, we remain confident that we meet our total year target. And we remain disciplined in our approach to development, only building facilities after receiving 1.5 to 2 times in indicative demand. We're also able to quickly adjust our development pipeline in line with our customers' demand because of the short construction cycle of facilities. Development completion were around 178,000 square meters. We expect this to pick up in the second half, which will feed through our leasing. On slide 8, gives you a picture of how we continue to expand our China portfolio. For the first quarter, we have started providing the same store NOI, a figure comparable to our peers in the industry. Same store net operating income for the first quarter were up 10.4%. It shows the strong strength of our portfolio. We moved into three new cities in China in the first quarter, taking our total presence to 29 major cities. These three cities are major significant cities with a combined population of 22 million people. We're making an increasing move into inland, reflecting a strong domestic demand there. Just to give some highlight on these cities, Wuhan has a population around 10 million people. It is a strong leading logistic hub and center of production and consumption. 2011 GDP growth was 12.5%, and the retail growth was 18% in Wuhan. Hefei, the capital and largest city in Anhui province, eastern China with a population of 7.5 million people, retail sales was 19% last year, with a GDP growth of 15%. Yangzhou, population 4.6 million people in the near center of Jiangsu province. Last year, retail sales was 17.6%, with GDP well ahead of the average of 12.2%. On slide 9, gives a snapshot of our China portfolio. Some highlights include our growing land reserve, which is now at 9 million square meters. Again, this gives us a strong pipeline for our future growth. We have also grown our NAV by 5% quarter on quarter. With that, let's turn to Japan. If you look at slide 10 on the highlights, our business in Japan is very stable. As we've outlined to you before, while Japan has a well-established logistic industry, it has a real scarcity of modern logistic facilities. In fact, of all the facilities in Japan, only 2.5% of the total space will be considered modern facilities. Occupancy in the portfolio remains very strong at 99%. Our recent acquisition of the portfolio with China Investment Corporation have trended ahead of expectation. So far, we have increased rent in the portfolio by 1%. That equates to about 2.6% annualized growth. During the quarter, we started two development projects in Japan, GOP Misato 3 and GOP Soja, comprising about 173,000 square meters. Both projects have a total development cost of $246 million. And this is a joint venture we have with, a 50-50 joint venture we have with Canadian Pension Board. Again, we continue to have a very strong, very long expiration on the portfolio with a 5.4 years average. On slide 11, it gives you a picture of our Japan portfolio. We have 3.8 million square meters of properties, which 3.6 million is completed, and this is a 29% growth year on year. 85% of our portfolio is located in Tokyo and Osaka. And rent remains very stable with our tenant retention rate at a very high of 81%. We have signed a number of major new leases, including in the last quarter, primarily from the e-commerce and 3PL sectors. Again, you can see some of this list on slide 12. But one of the things I'll highlight is that the company 360 Buy, this is one of the China's leading online retailers. Again, they have came out in public over the last few years that they will buy land and build their own facility. But again, it ended up they signed just recently they signed 25,000 square meter with us and Ningbo and Shenyang. And again, now they have a combined total lease of 82,000 square meter from us. And again, that makes them one of our top 10 customers. And I believe that they have a very ambitious plan to increase their warehouse space and consolidate distribution center around the major hubs, and we are looking forward to working with them. We're also talking to a number of other major companies based in China about how we can support their logistic needs across China. I also like to draw attention to two more slides before handing over to Heather. If you look at slide 13 and 14, they illustrate our combined logistic properties by end user and industries and the lease expiration profile. As you can see, that our business is well diversified between a wide variety of sectors and also the lease expiration well staggered. With that, I'd like to hand over to Heather to review our financial highlights.
Thanks, Ming. Please turn to slide 17, where I will summarize our quarterly results. The first quarter results remain very strong, with revenues up 32%, EBITDA up 54%, and PATMI 57%. On slide 18, highlights segmental revenue and the EBITDA in U.S. dollars. For the quarter, China revenue growth is up 75%, with the EBIT up 229%. Driven by completion and stabilization of our portfolio, revaluation gain, and contribution from acquisitions. Japan revenue was up 18%, and EBIT was up 11%. Our quarterly results included revenue of $5.4 million of fee income from both the joint venture with CIC and CPP. The first quarter results also included US$8 million early termination fees. Last year, in the same quarter, GLP had a negative US$2 million rental loss from the earthquake. If you exclude those two items, revenue in Japan would up 7% and EBIT up 1%. Within EBIT in Japan, we have recognized a 33% share of results for the CIC joint venture. The remaining 17% has been classified as assets held for sale in the balance sheet, and we're not recording any income from the 17%, even though we still hold in the portfolio. On slide 19, we review our quarterly results in local currency terms, with China revenue up 71% and the EBIT up 220%. Quarter over quarter, revenue in China was up 11%, driven by development completions and rental growth from our completed portfolio. Japan revenue was up 16%, with EBIT up 9%. Including the impact of those termination fees in the quarter and the larger impact from the earthquake, rental revenue would be up 5.3%, and the EBIT would be down 1%. On slide 20, you can see the overall valuation and breakdown of our portfolio. China has grown 39% to $5.7 billion from last year, while Japan has grown 22% to $8.4 billion. We have maintained the cap rates we have used since IPO. All increases in valuation coming from rental and occupancy growth, along with the benefit of recent acquisitions. Turning to slide 21, our balance sheet remains healthy, with $1.5 billion of cash and a low leverage of 22% net debt to assets. Net debt to EBIT is 4.7 times. This has improved since our last quarter earnings, when it stood at 5.7 times. Total assets increased 13% year-on-year due to developments and acquisitions, such as transfer, Wildlock, ePay, done during the year. Turning to slide 22 and 23, our debt maturity remains well staggered. We recently issued Japanese yen 15 billion of fixed rate notes on July 26th. The notes mature in 2027 and have a fixed coupon rate of 2.7. This yen denominated note serves as a natural hedge for our currency exposure, and the long 15 years tenure further expands GLP's debt maturity profile. With that, we'll open up for questions.
All right, thank you. Once again, as a reminder for the phone participants, you may press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And for the participants on webcast, you may type and submit your questions through the Ask a Question tab on the webcast player. We have a question from the line of Sean Gardiner from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Quick question on an update on indicative demand you have from your customers in China, and also just on your 2 million square meter start for the year. Is that still on track as it is at the moment?
Thanks, Sean. That's
an answer. Sean, can you repeat your first part of the question, because you didn't come through the I couldn't hear it first.
Okay. Sorry, yeah, the first part was just to get an update on the indicative demand you have from your customers in China. I think the last number was 4.2 million. How's that trended during this quarter? Is it up or down or any specific numbers?
Okay. As you know, more than half the leases are coming from existing customers. So every quarter we continue to not only asking what the new demands are, but also asking how is their business doing. So far, the information we receive is that it's quite encouraging. The customer is quite still positive. I think given this environment, the customers are slightly a bit conservative compared to 6 months ago. But based on our latest customer survey, 78% of customers forecast similar or faster business growth in 2012 compared to that of 2011. And 30% came back and said they can grow faster. 48% said they will remain similar growth. And on the pipeline, we continue to see about 5% uptick from the previous quarter. Now it's about it's still about 4.2 around about 4.2 million square meters of a backlog. Right now, our focus is to get the buildings under construction completed on time, on schedule, because we actually, in a lot of markets, we're running out of space to provide to our customers. So even though you read a lot about the economic environment, things are slowing down a bit, but what we're seeing is that there are two major drivers of business. One is domestic consumption. The retail sales is still quite high at 14% year-to-date, And then another factor is that a lot of old warehouses, which is 80% of the facilities that's in place in China, are old and obsolete. They're being torn down because of they used to be suburbs, now they're part of the city center. So those being torn down need to be replaced by new facilities. So those are two major drivers of our business, and we continue to see supply cannot meet up to demand in a lot of major markets.
The second part of your question, Sean, which Ming got so excited talking about customer demand that he didn't answer the second part, was, you know, are we still on track for our 2 million square meters of development starts? We are. We were a little short in the first quarter. That's really seasonal. If you look at the first quarter last year, it was a very similar situation. But given the strong demand, and, you know, to illustrate what Ming talked about, if you look at our portfolio, yes, we ticked up to 91%. Our occupancy is up 100 basis points. But if you look at the portion of our portfolio, about 81% we talk about is focused on domestic consumption, that's almost 100% leased. It's very, very, very well leased. There's almost no structural vacancy in that portion. The little bit of vacancy we do have is within our portfolio. Everything we're building this year, for the most part, will be domestic consumption-related or driven space for domestic consumption, driven by retail sales growth. That's why we're seeing such strong demand, such strong lease up in our new facilities. And we're continuing to lease up the port facilities. We're not worried about it. Yes, export growth is only 1%, 2%, but it's still positive, and that space will lease up in the next year.
And we're actually seeing some incidents like in Shanghai, because the port is located so close to the city, we have customers that are actually converting they're using the port facility for domestic distribution. So some online retailers, e-commerce companies are using our facilities in Shanghai port to distribute to Shanghai city. So on the domestic consumption related portfolio, actually is 98% leased up.
Yeah, exactly 98.
Can I just ask a follow-up question? Never mind. Just on the new leased area, because 280,000 square meters. Yeah, the run rate there is obviously quite a bit below your 2 million. How should we position that?
If you look at it, our overall stabilized occupancy rate, lease-up rate is higher from quarter to quarter. So basically what we're seeing is that, as I mentioned earlier, we are running our products to lease. So that's why our lease-up square meters is lower, because we're waiting for products to come online that need to be finished before we can lease it to customers. So we're excited about the project under construction, and we're just hoping that we can finish them faster and on time.
So have you got this is the final question for me. Have you got a number for completions you would expect in the second quarter?
We don't give forecasts, but on average, if you look at it, last year, we started about 1.6 million square meters, so most of that will be completed this year. So if it break out on a per quarter, we used to expect that kind of number.
Okay.
It's not perfect smooth. There's some seasonality, and it could be a little lumpy, but this year we expect at least 1.6 million will come online.
Yeah.
And that 1.6 million is already committed?
Well, we have a lot of... customers, about 25% is commit before the even building start, and then the rest will commit during different stage of completion based on their planning horizon. But so far, over the last few years, we based on experiences that most buildings are leased up before they even complete.
Thank you. Okay, fine.
Great, thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Kai Tan from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hello guys, it's Kai Tan calling from Macquarie. Just quickly a follow-up question on that development completions. I recognized in your annual report in 2012, you estimated the first quarter completion to be 309,000 square meters. Why there's a big difference of the actual completions in the first quarter? And separately, you seem to stop and disclose the PATMI number excluding the revaluation. Could you let us know what the number is for this quarter and also the EBIT excluding revaluation for Japan and China as well? Thank you.
And operator, I think we'll do, two more questions from, then we need to go to the webcast and answer some questions from there.
Okay.
Maybe just answer on the completion. Again, as I mentioned, there's various factors. For instance, like customer can require spec changes, or permitting sometimes could get delayed a bit. So anyway, we are. I think we're a little bit behind on the quarter of completion because our customer actually need these facilities. So we are focusing on to make sure that we catch up on the second and third quarter. But I think overall, you should expect project we started last year to complete this year because the overall development cycle is relatively short.
In terms of the revaluation gain, EBIT or PATMI, including excluding revaluation, the company take a view that we are in development business. So revaluation gain is normal part of the business. Starting this quarter, we're going to disclose EBIT PATMI number, including revaluation gain. Having said that, we did separately state that this quarter, we recognized $45 million of at the subsidiary level and $12 million at the joint control entity level for the company in terms of valuation gains.
Okay. Sorry, just a third question. You talk about NOI revenue growth, NOI growth of 10.4%. What's the same store sales growth, and what is the improvement in the occupancy component of that 10.4%?
It's part of its occupancy, and Bika can take you through exactly that. My partner Ming said that it was, you know, we're using a number similar to our peers. Actually, we're using a metric that's similar to our peers, but the number is much, much, much higher than anybody else, given the fact that we're in the best markets.
Yeah, well, I think we just want to use the same metrics to do a better comparison, because we're seeing that some of our peers in the industry are using same-store NOI growth, so we want to make sure.
Actually, it's a better metric because it does capture the real revenue growth from individual assets, which is both occupancy and rental rate driven.
Yeah.
It's what creates shareholder value, so it's a better metric.
Yeah. So is it fair to say that the improvement in occupancy is the main driver of that NOI growth in first quarter?
It's almost half and half. It's about half and
half. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Our rental growth is very strong. I mean, alone, our rental growth is very, very strong, but, you know, the combination gives you a true picture.
But also, I think the same store doesn't give you a good picture of some of the recent rental growth, because by definition, same store, you need to have the same facility last year and this year to combine to compare with. So for a facility that was not in place last year, they're taking out. So we're only taking about, when you're doing the same store, we can only take about 40% of our portfolio to do that calculation.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Derek Lowe from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yeah, actually, my question is related to this NOI growth that is very strong at 10.4. I really want to know what's the revenue growth on a same-store basis. Because if you look at your chart, your average rent is still at 103 per square meter per month, no change, right? So I'm really curious as to how you get that.
Okay, I think you're referring to the average rent.
Yeah.
I think that is a mix driven because we're moving into second-tier cities. So, again, that slide is a little bit misleading because it shows 1.03. It looks like rent haven't moved at all. How come we're having rental growth? But, again, we're adding a lot of second-tier city products. There are 80 cents, 90 cents compared to, you know, in Shanghai, 120 when they're. So the rent have grown on average about 4%.
So just average rent growth 4%, but you manage NRI growth of 10%.
Occupancy is about 6%.
Occupancy, because your occupancy actually improved only by 1%, right?
No, last year, because the same store sales, we had to compare 1 year prior and this year. And last year, those same portfolio only have 88% occupancy.
Okay. So 88 improving to 91. Okay.
Yeah.
And then just on the occupancy, I didn't quite get what Jeff was trying to explain on occupancy. My question really is that if you are looking at a very strong demand, would you be able to actually increase your occupancy much more? I mean, if it is now at 91%, so would it improve over time to much higher than 91%?
What we're trying to say before is we've talked in the past about 81% and growing as a percentage of our portfolio is space that focuses on domestic consumption-related customers. In that 81%, in that domestic consumption-related space, we are, as Ming said, 98% leased.
Okay.
The small bit of vacancy we have is almost exclusively with port-related space, and almost 100% of what we're building this year, I mean, there's always the exception where you have a build-to-suit or you have a port project where that's 100% leased, is all focused on domestic consumption. We are leasing up the domestic consumption space as fast as we can build it, and it's virtually 100% leased. It's at 98% leased now, and we're continuing to lease the port-related space. That vacancy will lease up. I mean, we're not building any more of it. Exports and imports continue to grow. As Ming said, a lot of the port-related space is relatively close to major population incubations, and we're using that for domestic consumption. So, yes, our occupancy will grow from 91%. What can it be?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just put it this way. In Japan, since we started the business in 2002, we've averaged 99% occupancy. So we can run high occupancies. We can continue to grow that occupancy. We've been building the business very fast in China. Now the occupancies are catching up with it.
Yeah, I mean, when we, in 2008, we stopped development for about 9 months. And occupancy went up to 99% in China as well. So again, everything we've seen so far, we continue to see a very strong demand from our customers.
Last question is on development starts. I understand that GLP is also growing, but as China is slowing, would your growth rate actually be slower?
Well.
When you say China slowed down,
just in terms of development starts and leasing up of facilities. I mean, it was very strong growth in the past few years, which was good. But just that when the China slows, it seems that the growth rate could slow down as well, right?
I think there's two things, two drivers of business, as I mentioned earlier. One is the economic growth. Domestic consumption retail is still growing 14% year to date, mm-hmm. So it's still very healthy growth. But another driver people are not aware of is that a lot of demand are coming from replacing old and obsolete facilities that are being torn down.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned to you, in China, there are about 550 million square meters of existing facilities. 400 million and more are being torn down over time. So replacing the old and obsolete warehouse that are being torn down is a major driver of business as well. But on top of that, yeah, 14% retail sales that continue to drive our business.
And people lose track of the power of compounding. 14% growth on 2011 numbers, retail sales, is a lot more growth than 18% growth was in 2010 on 2009 numbers, after 2 years of 18%.
Okay. Jeff, Ming,
the press never writes that because that doesn't make a good headline.
Okay. Jeff Ming, it's Des here. Can we also get an update on the J-REIT side?
On the J-REIT, mean with
the
we continue to explore all options in Japan, and we've got the best portfolio in Japan and the best management team and the strong management team and the capability to do a lot of things in a superior fashion, so stay tuned.
Okay. And, okay, sure. Thank you.
Right, thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Yu Kiao from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Ming. Just two questions. One is, what's the update on leasing for Misato and Soja in Japan? And the second question is probably a bit unrelated. I just want to get to know what's happening with B-Logis. I see that the stock that is related to the entity is suspended for a week.
Go first.
Okay. Let me start out with leasing demand is very strong in Misato. Everything that we have in that region is 100% leased. We're talking to multiple customers, and that's going well. Same with all our developments, either have significant pre-leasing or quite frankly, we're talking to customers 3, 4, 5 times the amount of space that we have. So it's a question of being selective. None of the buildings are close to completion. We feel really good about our occupancy. We feel really good about our lease our developments. That's not something that's keeping us awake at night.
What's the level of pre-commitment now?
Did we disclose that? Masato, we still have not signed any leases, but again, we have customer demand in excess of 5 times the amount of space that we're building, that we're talking to right now. Soja's at 39%, and Atsugi's at 35%. And these buildings have just broken ground in the last few months, and they're 12 to 15-month construction cycles. We pro forma out 12 to 15 months lease up beyond that. We're going to be, I'd be shocked if we don't beat our pro forma and beat our expectations on them.
To answer your second question on Bellagio's, as we said, that probably the people that have the second best portfolio in China are Bellagio's, and we are very interested and keen on their asset, and that's one reason that we took a stake in the company. Right now, they have been suspended because the largest shareholder are keen to privatize it, and so we're very excited about this opportunity. Maybe we'd like to explore if we can take play a bigger role and have a more have a better chance to get access to the asset. So that's the situation with Bellagio's.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you. We'll now hand it over to Ambika for questions from the webcast.
Hi, we have a couple of questions from the webcast. First, I'll read them out and then I'll allow management to answer. The first question is from Ann Chen from AEW Asia. She's asking, for the leases expiring this year in FY13, what type of rental reversion should we be expecting for China and Japan?
I think for Japan, if you look at the CBRE reports, they're looking at about 1.5% range.
Rental growth.
Yeah, rental growth. So. For China, different markets, but I think anywhere it could be anywhere from 5 to 7% to as high as 10-15%. And a lot of times, if the lease is below market, we see revision that is high as 20% on infill location in Shanghai. So we're seeing that on average in the major cities, first tier cities. Rent is basically growing about 8 to 10% on an annual basis.
Okay, next question is from Ethan Yu from Dalton Investments. He's asking about the share of results from JCEs. He said the share of results declined from $14 million in 4Q 2012 to $10.4 million in this quarter. Can you explain this reason?
That's because the last quarter we had a one-time gain on disposal of one of the Japan land in the joint venture, which is non-repeatable. On the pure apple-to-apple basis, if you take out one off, we continue to have a growth in our JC.
The next question is from Tony Darwell from Daiwa. Tony was asking for the PATMI number, X-Free valuations, and other, and I'm just going to quickly give him EBIT and PATMI X-Free valves. That's for EBIT X-Free valves, it's $131 million, and for PATMI excluding revals, it's $107 million. Well, now there's a couple more questions in the queue, so on the audio, so let's head back to audio, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Michael Lin from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, Ming. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Michael.
Hi. Can I just find out what was the deferred tax amount that was booked in this quarter?
The deferred tax, the methodology remains the same. For China, for example, every time we have revaluation gains, we'll recognize 25% deferred tax. For Japan, we'll recognize 5%. In this quarter specifically, primarily the gains on valuation from China. So again, 25% rate will be applied.
I think, Michael, just to point out that these are accounting reserve that we make, but in reality, in our business model, if we do sell assets, we typically put it into a fund model. It's done offshore. So, again, these reserve most likely will not be utilized.
Got it. And for the $6.47 million of management fees that was booked, is this just solely management fees for LaSalle and the CIC assets? And at what stage will you book development fees for the Japan asset?
It's actually a combination of the asset management fee as well as the development fee. As we discussed over our earnings calls, we did start two projects in Japan, so we started receiving development fees.
Yeah, we don't receive asset management fees on our development fund until the projects are completed and leased. So we have development fees prior to that.
Okay, but won't the asset management fees be for the LaSalle portfolio? Won't it be in that as well?
Yes, there is. Yeah. That's why it's a combination, correct.
Yeah.
Okay. And finally, there's been some market chatter that you're looking to go into Brazil. Can you clarify? And you know, is that a near term goal, or is it like a medium term sort of thing?
Well, it's impossible to comment on market chatter. There's been a market chatter about a lot of things. There's also there's also reports we're looking at Europe, which I don't know why anybody would do that right now. But we continue to look. We're very focused on the best markets. We're very focused on having the best platform. And it's something, you know, we continue to look at compelling opportunities. And if we find a compelling opportunity, we're fortunate to have the strength of the balance sheet, the strength of management to handle it. And if there's a compelling opportunity out there that we think will create significant shareholder value, we'll look at it.
Okay, thanks.
Great, thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Joy Wang from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Just a quick question on the acquisition you've done in China in the last 4 years. How has the actual return been versus your targeted return when you made the acquisition? Thank you.
I think each of these acquisitions, we do not pay a premium for the platform or the brand or any goodwill. So we basically underwrite it as if we were buying a piece of land, buying an asset. So we use the same discipline that we use as if we were buying a piece of land and doing development. So far, all the acquisition has been performing to our underwriting. And also, I think we are receiving a little bit even pleasant surprises in how strong the portfolio is performing in our airport project in Beijing.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Ken Yeung from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi, management. Some questions answered, but I have some new questions for you. First of all, I just want to ask regarding the increase in costs in China for your development projects. Are you forecasting, if I plug in my model, what can you give me in terms of guidance of the land cost increase as well as the construction cost increase? This is the first question. And secondly, regarding you have a 9 million land reserve, while your development start is basically 2 million square feet, 2 million square meter for this year. So what is the growth trend that you can give us in terms of the guidance on the development start based on your land reserve? Thank you.
Last year we started about 1.6 million, and then this year we're targeting start 2 million. So we probably can sustain that kind of pace for the foreseeable future. As far as cost, construction cost actually is relatively stable, given that the capital investment and other sectors are slowed down a bit. Actually, steel prices and concrete prices sometimes in our favor and also relatively flat. So in our construction is mainly steel and concrete. Land price we do expect land price to continue to increase because of land continue to be constrained But again, land typically make up only about 30% of our 30% of our costs. So if let's say even land increased by 10% a year, that's only a 3% increase on the total cost. So as long as our rent is increasing at, you know, fast pace in that, we should be able to maintain our development yield and our development profit.
Ming's exactly right. I've often told people that are huge commodity bulls, if you want to play commodities with an income stream, our buildings are concrete and steel. And if you believe that those are going to go up in price over the next 20 years, the cost of our buildings will go up and the value of what exists will go up commensurately.
Right, thank you once again. For the phone participants, you may press star 1 on your telephone keypad for more questions. And the participants on webcast, you may type and submit your questions through the Ask a Question tab on the webcast player. Our next question comes from the line of Callum Brummer from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just a really quick one from me, actually. Just I wondered if you could give us an update on what you're seeing in the competitive landscape, particularly in China, but also in Japan. There's obviously been some of your peers regionally increasing their targets for completions for the year. I just wondered if you know, you're seeing increased competition, or you think that the essentially the pie is big enough for everybody.
I think the market is plenty big enough for a lot of people, and you know, we've been facing competitors competition from day one, both international and domestic. So. So far, you know, we've been focusing on, you know, focusing on our own business and growing our own business. You know, I think, you know, we're fortunate in a very good market where supply is unable to meet up with demand. So there's plenty of business to go around for everyone. And I think we will continue to see that for the next. I think, especially in China, we probably see that in the next 2-3 years continue to be supply constraint. But I think if you say, is there any major players become a major threat to our business? I think for us, it's actually, can we train our people fast enough? Can we secure the site fast enough? Can we develop it fast enough? Can we meet our customer demand fast enough? These are things that we're focusing on right now.
Yeah, I'm aware today we've got the fortunate position of being as large as our next 8 competitors combined in China, and it's really incumbent upon us to focus on ourselves mm-hmm. and focus on growing that business, growing our people, growing our organization. You know, in a market that is as supply constrained as Ming said, that's 1/10 the amount of distribution space per capita that the U.S. has, of which 98% of it is obsolete, only 2% is considered to be modern. There's so much growth. There's so much opportunity. Other people will make money. We want other people to make money.
Yeah.
We just want to make sure we make more. One more question.
All right, thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Sean Gardiner from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I think part of it was answered, but maybe going back to the opportunity to expand via acquisition. Can you just talk about the sort of structures that you would envisage? Are you looking to partner up with some of your pension fund friends, or would you go it alone?
We missed the first part of that, Sean. I apologize.
Oh, sorry. The acquisition strategy, you know, in the future, if you do go for an acquisition, what is the preferred approach? Is it through your own balance sheet, or do you want to share it with investment partners? Like
Sean, that, you know, that's one of those depends type answers.
Okay.
And I don't mean to be, you know, vague or, and Ming, you know, we don't mean to be vague on that, but depends on the size of the acquisition, depends on the market it's in, depends on the timing. But clearly we are focused on and committed to building a best-in-class fund management platform. We're fortunate to have very strong, very long-lived relationships with the best-in-class investors, the CICs, the CPPs, the GICs of the world. And that's something that we will use, hopefully effectively in the future, to build out our platform and to create value.
I, you know, we can share with you that we have more interest from our for our financial partners than we're actually doing, because we actually have investors coming to us, want us to go into certain markets that we ourselves will not put our money in, so we refuse and reject the offer.
Right. We want to be disciplined. When we talk about being in the best markets, we do have investors that want us to go into other markets that, quite frankly, we don't find appealing. We don't see why you'd want to face those kind of headwinds. Ming, Heather, and I are big believers in, you know, having a tailwind is a whole lot better than facing headwinds. Given the fact that the majority of our net worth, all three of us, is in the company stock, you know, we're very, very disciplined about where we're going to invest. We're very focused on getting superior returns, and if that superior return takes the form of a joint venture with some of the best investors globally, that's what it'll be.
And then, sorry, just going back to the open comment from Ming. On e-commerce, I think you said that some of the customers you have are more cautious at this stage. Have you seen any push-off in any of their plans on facilities, or is it just general?
I think overall, absolute growth, we still continue to see very healthy growth. But I think what you've seen now that's missing a year ago. A year ago, everyone was betting that as long as I expand and grab customers, I have the revenue growth, then I can take this company and go public. I think that mindset have shifted and have changed it and said that, you know what, there may not be a secondary market there for me to exit. So now I got to focus on how to build a real business, a sustainable business. So I think on the long run, I think that's healthier for us. So a year ago, the companies were coming to us not only asking for space for their existing business needs, but they were building what the next 3 years will be required and committing space early on. Now I think they're just focusing on what I need now and next 12 months. So I think it's much healthier. And I think if you look at our business, as a percentage of our total portfolio, we'll continue to expand amount of space that go into e-commerce. The whole sector is growing. This is a trend that will not reverse.
Yeah, at some point in time, in the next 5 years, we're not going to talk about e-commerce.
It becomes just very common.
E-commerce,
yeah.
It's going to be a very significant percentage of the total sales in China and elsewhere in the world. Quite frankly, I think both Ming and I feel more comfortable with our e-commerce business today than we did a year ago, because we're seeing people growing at pace, you know, asking for space that they really didn't need and was making us nervous. Now people are rational and taking space they need. And with still calling e-commerce for the time being, growing at 100% per annum, it's still growing very nicely, but it's not irrational exuberance. It's rational optimism at this point on their part.
Thanks.
Thank you for all your questions, and I'll hand the call back to Mr. Jeff Schwartz for closing remarks.
Thank you so much. Summarize real quickly, we hope we've illustrated that we at Global Logistics Properties continue to execute effectively on our plan. We're obviously very mindful of the continuing economic troubles in Europe and elsewhere, but our focus on only the best markets globally is driving the performance of our business. And our financial strength provides both the stability and the flexibility to take advantage of growth opportunities as they arise. With that, I'll turn it back to Ambika and want to thank all of you for taking time with us this evening.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Feel free to contact us for any questions, and we look forward to seeing you all soon.